I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. The air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Welcome to Toward Anarchy. Thank you so much for joining me. Of course, I am Michael Storm, and it's always a pleasure to be here. It's great to have another episode to share with you, and there is much to talk about with my guest. This is something that we've done before, right? We've talked about these things before. We've talked about music. We've talked about drums. We've talked about education, and we've talked about the power of music and education and all of these things combined, and we're going to do it again today with Mark Feldman. He's a musician and an educator, and he's helping adults learn to play drums online. So I'm curious about how that goes, and we'll dive into that in about 2 seconds. I just want to remind you, click that like button, click that share button, click that subscribe button, get your mallet out, get your sticks out, give them a whack, whatever you got to do, give them a paradiddle, let them know, let me know that you're out there, and you can always follow along at Toward Anarchy on the social media, and of course at towardanarchy.com. Mark, great to see you. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. 25 years as a session drummer, and you've been an executive for Sony. You've worked with legendary artists from Bob Dylan to Santana to Billy Joel and beyond. Really great to get a chance to talk with you and pick your brain about what it is you've done and what it is you're doing with teaching people how to play drums. So I really appreciate you coming and hanging out.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm really looking forward to it. I really enjoy having these conversations because I'm fond of music. I play multiple instruments myself and have been playing the trumpet since I was about 10 years old. And so I've had my experience. Grandma started taking me to the symphony when I was very, very young, and so young that I didn't watch it. I'd just curl up on the floor and go to sleep while everybody else is watching it. But very young age, and so a lot of influence, and there's a lot of power behind music, not just the emotional, sort of produced end of music that most people are familiar with, but the entire process, and everything from the learning and the buying of the instruments, and it just, the whole process is an amazing thing, and it physically and mentally changes you in the end and makes you a better person.
Yeah, I agree. I started playing drums when I was in high school, and I started just being really into music and listening to records all the time. Back then they were records, actually. And, I was always listening to the drums somehow. And then that evolved into pretending I was playing them and tapping things. So it was something that I naturally moved towards. And so I just followed it. But as far as, changing your life and having a lot of meaning, and yeah, it's done a lot for me, and physically and mentally, it's done a lot for me. It's done a lot for my confidence. It's done a lot for my brain, and it saved me from death and destruction. I'll tell you one little story about that. When I was in high school, I hung out with some friends who like to get into trouble, like many of us probably did. And often after school was over, my friends would be like, come on, let's go hang out. We're going to go, steal things from the store and mess around and prank people. And often I was like, nah, I got to go home and practice. So I would go home often after school. I would just go home and practice for hours and not hang out with my friends. And my friends made fun of me. But there was at least two occasions where the kind of trouble they got into was serious. And like one time, one of my friends got arrested and there was a fight and all sorts of trouble that I avoided because I went home to play drums.
That's fantastic. I think that's probably something a lot of people. It's hard to say because with music, there's no background. There's no particular place that you come from that determines how good you'll be at music or what type of music you're going to listen to or how it's going to affect you. But I think that that general story of being the guy who doesn't follow along was like, hey, man, you know what? Maybe I'm just going to go do my thing and let you guys go do your thing today. I'm going to go practice. And I know people resonate with that. I know I did. I wish I'd have stayed home and practiced some more. I wouldn't have gotten as much trouble as I did had I stayed around and practiced some more. I remember that jazz. I still wish I had that day. I had a Fender jazz bass. It was probably, 1984 or something like that. I had no idea what I had. It was just a thing. It was just an instrument. But I didn't have. It's unfortunate because I think that almost. That early introduction to music and so much of it, classical music with grandma, parents were into country music and rock and roll. It's a wide swath of music and choices to choose from. And so I think I kind of took it for granted. And it took me a while before I realized how important those sort of instruments and things were and that they weren't, and that it wasn't about, I think it was, the rock and roll show, right? You see the guys get up there on stage and light instruments on fire and smash them up and everything. Oh, these things must just be a dime a dozen. We can do whatever we want with these things. Maybe right. When you're rich and you've made it, I suppose. This powerful influence of the instrument and the feel, just everything, picking them up and you feel the weight of them and the mechanics of them and in some cases the electronics of them, everything for a young guy like myself. I take things apart, try to make different sounds. It's just a wonderful path, I think, for some of us. And I like how you phrase it. It's saved you because I think it's true. I think that's a story that a lot of people are familiar with, that whole idea that you can just get away into your own thing.
Yeah, it's constructive, and so on that day I was doing something constructive rather than destructive, and the whole path besides, I think, learning an instrument does a lot of things for young people and adults. And one of the things it does, I think, is when you start figuring out how to get good at an instrument, whether it's because you have someone helping you with lessons and then you practice and you start figuring out how to practice and when you actually know the thing that you're working on, when is it in your brain and body so that you can actually play the thing that you're learning without thinking about it? And there's all these little details to it, which I think really helped me learn how to learn, right? Because me learning to play the drums, like when I went to school later, it helped me understand better how to study and how to know when I was ready for that test. And even like working a job, like it just helped me do everything else that I wanted to do later. And it sounds like an exaggeration, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it is, and I think there's a history of it. Music, not just musicians, but normal people. And I separate myself from musicians. I'm not a musician. I am a guy who plays multiple instruments. I'm not a musician. I don't make music. There's a difference. There's a line there. I'm not in a band. We're not creating our own music. I just play the drums. I just play guitar. And I enjoy it. I do it for myself. I do it because it makes me feel good. But that is, you're absolutely right. That's something that I learned too, and it's been over the last decade, because I taught myself how to play drums in the last 10 years. I've been around them in band and in marching band and jazz band and everything all through school, all that stuff. I've been around them. I'm not unfamiliar with them. I've sat behind a trap set many, many times and played around, but I finally sat down one day and I said, I'm just looking on eBay is what it was. I'm clicking through eBay and drum sets. Oh, yep. Oh, wait. Well, that's a good deal. I'll make an offer. What do you say? So I click and I make an offer, and the next thing you know, I own a drum set. An entry-level digital Alesis set, but it gave me a starting point, you know? And I waited long enough that the mesh heads were the standard, that it wasn't just the pads, you know, so you get that reflex.
Right.
Yeah. And
right.
I just took off from there, and I've been talking about it across the show the whole time, over the show the whole time, and talking about how, you know, finding that great deal and just not being able to pass it up. And then after that, well, okay, now I have a drum set. Now I guess I actually really have to learn how to play the thing, not just sit around, you know, whatever. And so I did, and I just play about an hour every day. And I just play along with other music. And I would immediately, it's like, oh, you know, this, I can tell, right? It's just what you were just talking about. You get this feeling, right? You get this, oh, I'm picking this up. And if you're paying attention, you notice how it is too, because you kind of said there's all these subtle little things. There's the left hand that doesn't work the same way as the right hand because it doesn't face in the same direction, and you don't use it as much. And it's, you're trying to train that thing while you're, you know, trying to get the left foot to work differently and the right foot to work differently. And you're thinking about your timing. I know there's, one of these songs, Well, it just went right out of my head. A Bruno Mars song, and it's just one of those great little disco kind of beats that he has in a lot of his songs. And there's this one timed part where they're just and they keep coming back to it, and you got to keep coming back to it and keep coming back to it like four times. And it's one of those things where I noticed and say, oh, well, there's my point. If I hit this point every single time in my brain, in my head, in working it on the drum, I time it perfectly every time. But as soon as I miss that one, as soon as I don't look over there, as soon as I don't do that, it's all those little things put together and trying to keep them all at one time. You got to remember to sit up straight. Yeah, I have to, you know, there's just all of these things that you're doing all at one time, and
right,
your body's just going crazy.
Right. Now, how did you learn? Because I'm interested in, because one of the big focuses of what I do now is helping adults. Maybe would have been, you're one of the people I would have wanted to, you know, help in my business. And it makes me wonder, how did you go about learning to play the drums when you started?
Well, I'm already musically inclined, obviously, if I've already played these other instruments and everything. And like I said, I've been in jazz band and marching band. I was in all those things all through school. And I've been in rock bands here and there. So I'm exposed to drums, but I'm also a music guy. I listen to music constantly. And so I listen to the drums and I hear the drums. So I already know these beats. You know, you whip out even something, you know, sort of, you know, Kansas, Carry On My Wayward Son, or Triumph, you know, Magic Power or something. Some of these bands that have just really powerful, but not like Rush type drums going on. Neil Peart, you know, not necessarily that, but still very technical. I already know them. I hear them in my head all the time. So all I have to do is just make my body do them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it's not so easy for some people. It sounds like maybe you had have a little more, I don't know, from your listening, but because sometimes people can hear it in their head, and then when they try to make their body do it, they can't do it at all. But it sounds like you didn't have that trouble.
No, I'm sure I've struggled just like everybody else to bring each limb along. This one works great. The right hand works perfectly.
Right.
It does everything it's supposed to do. It does it right,
right.
Every single time. But
right.
Yeah, the other limbs are a little slower, a little harder to work with. But I've forced myself to do some things out of the ordinary. I'll set the drum set backwards and play the other way. Try to get try to get the feet working in working with the other side of the brain, I guess, is ultimately what it is, because we are talking about literally building physical pathways from the left side to the right side of the brain. That's what drummers do when
right.
they're drumming. Yeah. And so I think I just always very ambidextrous, and I had everything
right.
going for me to be able to do it, I guess.
Right. Well, I would argue that you're more of a musician than you say you are. You know, if you're playing multiple instruments, I can only play, I don't really play anything besides drums. I'm fantasizing about learning the bass, though, but I don't know if I'll get around to it.
Bass is the one that I know piano is the one that I know the least. Avoid the black keys and you'll be fine. that's the magic to playing the piano when you don't know how to play the piano. Don't touch the black keys, you'll be fine. bass, though, I can make it make noise. And that's why I call myself, I guess, just a instrument player as opposed to a musician, because I can't, the bass, I just make it make noise. The guitar, I can play it. I could probably play rhythm for just about any decent band anywhere. Couldn't play a lead to save my life, haven't practiced that much. But I'm one of these people that believes that aside from the rare, the rare occurrence, there's no such thing as a music prodigy. What there are is a bunch of people who, if they're lucky, started early enough that it's easier to make those connections in the brain and the body work together, but that ultimately they practiced and they tried hard and they played over and over again, and they played for hours, and they skipped going to the events and this thing and that thing and hanging out with the friends and getting in trouble so they could go play and learn how to play their instrument. I did the whole child prodigy thing for me is, come on, prove it. Prove it wasn't just somebody standing over them going, don't do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't believe in talent at all. I think that in science, I've read a bunch about it. Science kind of backs up that it's not really talent. It's about the work, and it's about the mental ability to do that focusing and make yourself go in that room every day and spend that time and just do that because you're curious and you enjoy it and it's fun and you like doing that work. And that's sort of what the talent is. The talent is that piece of your brain that makes you do that.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. So you've done some of this. I've done a little bit of looking into it, just the idea, and only because I think the algorithm, really, truly, is sort of just browsing through the news one day, and it pops up this thing. It was a study on how drumming increases the connectivity between the left side and the right side of the brain, and it creates, because your body, your arms and your legs want to work in unison. They don't want to work separately for climbing or swimming or something. If you watch how people climb or swim, their arms and their legs work in unison. They're not working against each other, going different directions at all different times, and you have to train your body to do that. And that was really intriguing to me to see that. It made perfect sense. It resonated with me right away. Oh, yeah, well, this makes perfect sense. And that was also a driving factor in me wanting to do it. I'm training my body to work different, my brain and my body to work completely differently than other people's brains do. And so that was another thing that helps drive me to it. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that give people the most difficulty at first is having to, for people who don't know, it's independence is sort of like the drumming term, which basically means you play one rhythm with one limb that's steady, and then your other limbs, you teach them how to play any other rhythm while maintaining the first one and not changing it. And that's what's so hard to people, but there's actually systems to learning it. And the system is really like, okay, well, whatever the rhythm is that you're going to keep steady, you systematically learn to play each other rhythm that you want one at a time with each other limb. It's just, it's an organized, you know, method. And, you know, that's one of the things I teach in you know, my educational materials, which are mostly focused on adults.
That was what intrigued me about it, when you talk about adults, because it's easier to teach children how to play. If you can get them to sit down and pay attention, it's easier to teach them anything. They're just little sponges. That's what their brains are perfectly set for. It haven't calcified and don't have, you know, preconceived notions about this, that, and the other thing, and political ideologies that drive them to, well, I can't do that because the left doesn't let me, or the right doesn't let me, or whatever weird thing it is that people get in their head past the age of about 15 or so, that starts to turn them away from learning. I don't know if it's the public school system itself or if it really is just a physical thing and it becomes harder to learn because the system doesn't program as easily. Whatever. It's probably all of these things in general and specifically at other times, depending on what it is. But the whole idea of teaching adults as opposed to teaching children, and it's neat. You're probably familiar with Drumeo and some of these other things out there. Really fantastic tools and neat things that they're doing and having fun, you know, with some of these rock stars and having them come in and play over other people's music with their own beats and things like that. And really cool and really fun. But one of the things they also do is that they've taken, you know, like Chad Smith or somebody like that, and they've taken him to Guitar Center to be the teacher for the drum teacher for the day or something. And what interests me the most about that is not being taught by Chad Smith. It was the people who are coming to drum. And, you know, you have a few kids and they're wide-eyed and just amazed at everything that happens, you know, as they should be. But then you see, you know, 35, 40-year adult is talking about how she has her kids and her children, and she's just trying to do something different for herself, exactly what we're talking about, expanding the brain, expanding the body, learning something, dedicating yourself to something. It's all a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a beautiful thing, and it's the end goal, I think. I mean, for me, one of the reasons why I wanted to teach so much was because drumming has just made me so happy in my life, right? And I thought, all right, well, if I'm going to try to do something good with my life, what if I could help other people get that feeling that I've gotten, which is so beautiful, that made me so happy? And so the thing, I agree with some of the stuff you're saying also about kids versus adults. With kids, it's like kids don't know any better to have any fear or think, I can't do that, or that's hard. Or maybe they'll think certain things are hard, but adults, like you say, get to a certain point in their life and all these other things start popping around, thinking, oh, I can't do that. I'm too old to do that. Or if I had started when I was young, I could have done it. But now, and sort of making them feel more comfortable and encouraging them that they actually can do it is part of the trick with adults, is because they really can do it. It's their head that's telling them they can't do it. And when I show them the systems that I have for learning, and they start learning, and then you see that little bright light in their eyes and the smile, then, you know, it feels really good for me, and I see them learning something and having fun. And it's good to be able to overcome that you know, that step where someone goes from thinking they can't do it to going, oh, maybe I can do this.
Yeah, it's truly a life lesson. That's really why I've liked sharing it and why I've come back and had people like yourself on the show over the years, because it's true. It's a perfect life experience. It really is. I started seeing it as I bought, when I bought the kit, the first kit, because immediately I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to play this thing. And that's no question. So where do I go next? All right. I'm already looking at the future. I'm already thinking, all right, well, this, I've got to have a bass pedal because this is just one of those tappers at the moment. It comes with that cheap little tap thing. I got to get a real bass pedal.
Right.
Got to have a real bass pedal. Well, I got to have a couple more drums. I need one more cymbal. I need one more tom, you know, because the brain allows me to do that. So of course I got to go out and buy that and plug those in. And so,
right.
You know, bought this entry level set. And so there's economics there. I bought it, $250 versus $375 or something like that they were going for at the time. So I'm already in it less than somebody else. And it's brand new out of the box. I opened it right up, put the whole thing together. First person to ever touch it, you know, it's all mine. But then it's the black skinny piping on the cage. It's not the nice chrome thicker tubing that looks nicer. It's actually stronger. It's better. It's better built. And so I'm already looking at the thing to get a new pedal. I need to get the expanded cymbals. I got to get the different brain. In fact, I had the turbo brain. I got to get the nitro brain. So let's do it. So one at a time, I just upgraded these things. I upgraded the cage. I upgraded the brain. I added the pedal. I added the extra cymbal and the extra tom. And now I'm thinking, I got to go buy me another set because I need rototoms. I need some new pert things going on. You know, I got to get the rest. And so the whole thing about patience, time, learning it, because I'm not going to, you know, if it's the, I'm sure you've heard this with the musicians with the guitar, the guy that says, oh man, I got to go get me a six string and you, or a seven string. And you're thinking, dude, you're struggling with six. Maybe you want to try to figure that one out before you add another one. So I have
right.
that in the back of my head because I remember thinking that many, many, many years ago with somebody and saying, well, I'm not going to do that to myself. If I'm going to get into this, I'm going to play and I'm going to learn the thing. And it's, well, if I can play all these
right.
ones. Oh, wait, I got one more to go. Yes, yes.
Right, right. Yeah, man, I mean, you got to – it reminds me of like – there's that kid at camp, at sleepaway camp, who had all the gear, the catcher's gear. He had the mask and he had that padding and he had the cup and he had the crazy mitt and he had the shin guards and he couldn't play baseball at all. He was horrible at playing baseball, but he had all the gear. So you don't want to be that guy, right, who owns every little crazy, you know, you can learn, you can do pretty well on the drums with just a regular four-piece drum kit. And that's sort of like why, one of the reasons why I always loved the old jazz drummers, you know, like I've been inspired by a lot of those jazz drummers because one reason was, wow, they sounded unbelievable and could play these incredible drum solos on just a four-piece kit, one tom, one floor tom, you know, two cymbals. So, you know, you don't need all of that stuff, but I understand the gravity that pulls you to want to do that. Because I used to have a crazy kit, and then I started going, you know what, I don't know if I want to bring all this stuff to every show, you know, and be that guy, because that's embarrassing too, to be that guy who, oh no, we're not ready to play yet. I'm just still, hold on, I have to set up this extra tom up here, right? And then, you know, I wanted to be the guy who could sit behind that four-piece kit and just, you know, crush it with less.
Well, there's,
that meant something.
There's a lot to be said about that. I'm the same way with you. The jazz drummers, these guys, they just have, you know, two, three cymbals, one tom, maybe a floor tom, and a snare in the bass, of course. That blows my mind that they can make it sound like a full set. They're just going crazy, and they just have these big roles and total respect for it, because it's different to come up listening to music and respecting music and loving it all your life, and then to start to play it and start to realize what goes into, obviously being around it all my life, I understood these things to some extent, but until you start getting into the equipment and until you start learning that, oh, well, there's these guys that do this and there's this guy over here that can do this thing and there's Ellis Barrio and that guy's amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
He's nuts. Insane. Yeah, he's nuts.
Yeah, and Nandi Bushnell, my God, just that young girl, the way she plays. You start watching and you start seeing this, and then you go and you look at, like, so you take somebody like myself who's a metalhead, right, but has all this wonderful classical background and country and all this underneath it as well, but growing up a metalhead, loving the metal guitar, loving the metal drums, thinking Pantera, thinking Slayer, thinking Metallica, and Neil Peart and Rush, I mean, in terms of just the constant, the rolls, the fills, and it's always going, and even when you think there's a beat going, there's still something. How do you do that? Does he have a third arm? What is going? Where'd that come from? Right. How do you get from here to over here and back over here without even losing this sound over here? Some magical thing, and just looking at the total growth. That reminds me, you got to tell us about the Neil Peart thing before we even forget about it, because we're going to end up going through this thing and talking about a couple of fanboys talking about music like we are, and we're never going to get to this really cool story with Neil Peart. So tell me the story about Neil Peart real quick.
Well, I was a young buck, like in my 20s, and I was studying at Drummers Collective, this kind of known drum school in New York City. And I was taking it really seriously at the time and practicing a lot. And I read Modern Drummer magazine all the time. And I picked up the latest issue. And in it, there was an ad for a drum solo contest. And what you had to do was record a drum solo and submit it on cassette. It was a 2-minute drum solo. And Neil Peart was the judge, and he was cleaning out his closet, I think. He had a closet full of old drum sets. And so the prizes were his different drum sets. And so I just thought, I should just do this. Like, I had no idea whether anything would come of it. I assumed probably nothing would happen, but I just thought I should just do this anyway. So I went and did it. I recorded a solo I had to go to a recording studio to do it. And I sent it in, and I wound up being one of the winners. A few months later, I got a letter in the mail from Neil himself, telling me that I was one of the winners, and that what my prize was his Chrome Slingerland kit, which the fans nicknamed it Chromey. The drum set had this name, Chromey, and it was the drum set that Neil played on the first Rush albums that he played on and used on tour with the first tours that he did with them. And if you look at the album, the live album, All the World's a Stage, the very first live album they put out, the cover of that album is just the stage before they play. And the drum set on that album cover is the drum set that he gave me.
Wow.
And so, it was crazy. It was to me, unbelievable and a dream come true.
Yeah.
And the way it circles around is that I had that drum set in storage for more than 20 years. And there came a time when I was starting this drum education business, which, by the way, is called Bang the Drum School. And I was starting it, and I needed money to fund the studio that I had to renovate and, you know, start the business. You know, you need money to start a business, right? And so I sold that drum kit for $25,000 to a collector, and I used that money to start my school. And so the joke I like to make is that I got paid $25,000 for a 2-minute drum solo.
That's fantastic. I love that
story. It's not exactly true, but it's sort of true.
Man, that's so cool that it comes full circle like that. I think that's the best part of it, right? You know, you have this drum set. You're never going to get rid of that thing. Never, you know, until something like that comes up, when there's an opportunity to take that drum set and turn it into magic, true magic. That's insane. So do you happen to know who you sold the set to? Is it still around? Do you have any idea?
You know what? I don't remember the guy's name, but it was a collector, and then he did a lot more with it than I ever did. You know, like he took it to shows and like to drum festivals and had set it up and had people come and take pictures behind it and stuff. So in a way, like, you know, he did more for it than I did. Like it was just sitting in my, you know, it was sitting in my closet. And so he brought it out into the world, and he was a real collector, and, you know, so he gave it a different kind of life than I was giving it, you know.
No, but I think the story is complete. I think that's okay. It's not like there's something missing or you missed an opportunity in there. It did what it was supposed to do, right? I mean, it helped you do what you're doing today. I think that's just amazing. That's fantastic. It's just such a great story. But what I was saying before, I just wanted to make sure we got that story in there because it's just great.
Thanks.
Something that comes full circle like that, man, truly wonderful. At the beginning and right back around to what's not the end, but it's the next stage, right? That's just wonderful. I hope things like that happen to me, you know? And I know people do hope things like that happen to them. But, you know, just, you know, coming up, you know, watching these metal drummers and all the big drums and stuff, but then to sit and, you know, go back and listen to, like, ZZ Top or The Police when you talk about jazz drummer type, you know, The Beatles. You know, I'm never a big Beatles fan. I never really paid attention to the drums in the Beatles songs. It was always about the lyrics, of course, in the Beatles songs and maybe some of the weird,
right,
you know, sounds and things. And so never really listened to the drums. And over the last couple of years, you know, paying more attention when I hear a Beatles song and listening and just, wow, Ringo's a really good drummer. He's another one of these drummers with a really small set and just turns out amazing pieces of music with it and does it so effortlessly. Sometimes I see myself sitting there and I'm thinking, oh, man, there's so much effort going into this. It should be easier. It should be a little easier,
yeah.
Because I'll see, oh, where was it? We just came back from a Death Clock concert here a few weeks back, and it's Brendan Small's band, the cartoon band.
Right.
Yeah. And there was a couple other bands, and I've seen Death Clock before, but I'm trying to remember I'll remember the name off the top of my head, but because I've seen them a couple of times, I'm confusing, and I know it wasn't the Necrogoblicon, God, what a name, what a fantastic band, but Amon Amroth, Amon Amroth. That's who it was. And so they've got this giant Viking head that the helmet that the drum set sits on. It's a huge riser. The drums sit way above the rest of the band. And so you can see him sitting up there, and he is just so relaxed. He's just sitting there so square, and it's what I'd be doing. And he's just kind of looking around. And it just blows my mind that it can be that comfortable. And I feel that, and I know that's what I'm going for. I know that's where I'm at. And, yeah. And I think keeping it simple really helps with that. And so going back and listening to those Beatles songs and of course then, you know, the stuff that keeps that rhythm going. It's almost easier. I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, but I find it almost easier to play something like Rush than something that is rhythmic. And I think this is probably true. I think this is probably true for most drummers. It's harder to keep that constant rhythm and keep that straight than it is to get a little loose and just kind of get out there and let those drums fly, you know, and still keep the beat. Not just going crazy, not just whacking the drums, but just be able to come back to the beat. Yeah.
No, I agree 100%. And I think, what I hear you saying is that it's hard to not do that stuff. It's hard to just play the same beat without varying it over and over and over again. And it's true. And the thing about that beat that repeats over and over again, if you listen to lots of the records that are on the radio, you know, not the metal stuff, not some of the crazy stuff that we like, but like the stuff that makes lots of money, usually the drums are very simple and repeating and in the pocket, and you can tap your feet and you're going to go like this with your head. And that simplicity is what makes it hypnotic. And so that's the secret that lots of people have a hard time executing on. And in my course, I have this course for adult beginners called Drumming for Absolute Beginners. And one of the lessons in there is called the 5-minute test. And in that lesson, I play a rock beat at a certain tempo along with a metronome. And it's the simplest rock beat ever. It says, doot, dat, doot, doot, dat, doot, dat, doot, doot, dat. And I play that same beat for 5 minutes without stopping. And that's the challenge to my students is, can you do this with me and resist the urge to just do that? You know, don't do anything else. It's hard as hell to do that.
That's the discipline, right? That's where it's important. And I learned this long before I learned to play the drums, which is interesting. It's interesting how these things come back. So, I'm from Denver, Colorado. And so in Denver, we had a place called Rockley Music. Huge music store. One of the biggest music stores, in the world through its time. Not so much maybe anymore. I don't even know if it's around anymore. But a big store. And they would do, they'd have sessions, we'd come in and I'd sit there and watch Blue Saraceno with like 5 other people play guitar for us, amazing, or somebody on drums, I remember one year in particular that they did a drum contest, and my buddy Derek, he was the one of us that had played drums his entire life, started in single digit age and had been playing, and we're 18, 19 years old, and he went and he entered this contest, and he played really well, except that I told him this, is that he didn't come back to the beat. He never gave anybody something to sit on. It was, done. There was nothing to come back to.
Right.
you know, come back to that. And because that's what people expect in music, for one thing. That, you know, you don't just get out there and just beat on the drums. That's why the drum solo is like one drum solo, not the whole show. There's a reason for it, because it all works together. And I just remember specifically looking at him and saying, the reason you didn't win this, you should have won this. You were better than all the rest of these drummers, but you never kept a beat. You never actually used the drums. You just beat on them.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And that reminds me that, yes, the brain wants that resolution, right? So it's like the tension and release. And so that's what the groove is for, to come back and give you some balance and to give you that feeling, that foot tapping feeling again. And it also reminds me that really good drum solos have groove to them, so that even when the guy or girl, man or woman, is playing some crazy stuff, a really good drummer, you'll hear that pulse even underneath all of that. And then, yes, most of the time a good drum solo will also come in and out. There'll be some kind of simple grooving kind of things that happen in there to pull you back in. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, it's all about there's something core to it. It has to be. You've got to be able to come back to that, because you have to bring people back home. There's no doubt about that in my mind. And if I had to guess, I would say that come from a lack of him playing with other musicians and learning with other musicians, because we played in school, but that's too big. That's not the intimate, you know, 3-4 guys in a band, whatever, where you're interacting and working with each other and you notice and you hear and hopefully you're working together to make it all come together. But, you know, in that larger setting where we played in sort of, because we played all together through junior high and high school in marching band and jazz band and all that stuff, and in concert band. But those are just so much bigger than just the rest of us, and it's so much different. And,
right.
And it's interesting, he knows this, right? He knew this then. He knew that. I knew it. He knew it. He should have known it. But it didn't sink in. And I think that's from the lack of playing with a band as opposed to, you know, just playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how old was he? He was a kid, right?
I think we were all, we were in our early 20s, I think. I think we were probably past I think we were probably right about 21 or 22. And I think Derek might even be maybe a year and a half older or so. So he was a little bit further along. It was definitely early 20s, because we were definitely out of high school already. I remember that.
Right.
I'm picturing all of these fun, wonderful things that happened around. So I mentioned specifically the Blues Saraceno performance, myself and my three buddies. We were all in bands,
right,
and everything together. We
right.
showed up one day to take me to Rockley to go see Blues Saraceno and play in this little clinic. And when we got into this is ridiculous, I don't know why I'm remembering all of this. We got into the car, and before Dwayne could turn the ignition on the key, we were surrounded by cops. They were sticking their guns in the windows. And then we looked around, and there's cops all the way down the street. They had the street blocked off at both ends, and it was just insane. And it was because I was just moving into this house, and I had just carried my rifle into the house a little while ago, and somebody called the cops and said that we were transporting arms or some garbage like that. I'm waiting for my buddies to show up so we can go check out this clinic and go see Blues Saraceno. It was really popular at the time because he was playing with somebody. Poison or somebody like that. I don't even remember. But he was really big at the time, and so it was a really good opportunity, you know, in this small space to get and go and see this amazing rock musician, this rock guitarist. And yeah, we're trying to head down to Rockley to go see this thing, and all of a sudden there's all these cops sticking their guns in our windows. That happened that same day. That's hilarious that I just now connected all that.
Wow. You almost got arrested.
Yeah, it was almost a lot of... Yeah, it was crazy. I don't know, just some nosy neighbors. You know, nothing illegal. In fact, it was just a little .22 rifle. And the only reason that it was even out is because I didn't have a carrying case for it at the time. It was fairly new. You
right.
know? Yeah, it wasn't even like an AR-15 or something like that. It was just weird.
Yep. That's crazy stuff happens.
Crazy. Yeah. that's one of the lighter stories. We don't have time for many of the others. Tell me a little bit about what you're actually doing with teaching people. Tell us about the program. Tell us how to find it in case somebody wants it, because that wouldn't surprise me if some people in my audience would be interested, especially after listening to me talk about it and how happy it makes me. That's part of it.
Yeah.
You mentioned that word a number of times. It makes you happy.
Happy.
Yeah,
it makes me happy. It's and like I said, that's why I'm doing it. But the school is called Bang the Drum School. And the website is bangthedrumschool.com. And what we do there is I specialize in beginners, and it's a bunch of different online courses and materials aimed at helping anyone wherever they are in the world be able to start from the very beginning and learn how to play drums. And one of the entry points to learning at our school is a book I wrote called Drumming Decoded. And it's like 179-page book, and it's available digitally on PDF. And basically what it does is it lays out my whole system of teaching, so that if you had never played drums before and you were like, I have no idea what to do to start, like I don't even know what the things are that I'm supposed to learn, or, you know, how to hold the sticks, or what this book does is it lays out all of that stuff like in different pieces. Like, for example, there is a framework that I use that I call the five pillars of drumming. And basically what that is all of the skills that you need as a drummer, you can kind of distill it down into just five things. So the things really quickly are reading, technique, independence, which we were talking about before, groove, and vocabulary. And if you think about it, and you know, some people will debate me on little pieces here and there, but generally speaking, I think it's a pretty good framework. And if you are a beginner and you know nothing else but that you should work on those five things, and you pursue those things and work on them equally, you'll become a good drummer. So that's all in my book, and that's the basis of all of the teaching.
That's really cool. And so then how does it work? So it's specifically online, right? It can be done at a distance. And are you coaching, or what is it there?
You know, I'm not really – I have done some coaching, and I've had coaching programs in the past, but – lately what I'm doing, and maybe I'll bring that back again, but right now the way the program works is the courses are self-contained. So if you come and, you know, sign up for the Drumming for Absolute Beginners course, it's really organized and it's step-by-step. There's like 37 videos. It's like more than 7 hours. There's like a 30-something page book with all the exercises. So really, if you're the kind of person who's self-directed, all you really have to do is log in to the course and just do the stuff that the course lays out for you and follow it step by step. And when you're done, you'll be able to play the drums. And there's other courses too. I have like a Phil's course. I have a John Bonham Phil's course. I have a course that teaches you how to read, you know, so there's a lot of other things, but sort of like the flagship is that Drumming for Absolute Beginners, because it delivers this result. It's like, I can't play drums. I can play drums, you know? And, yeah, so it's all self-directed. You can just do it on your own. You just sort of plug and play, follow the steps, and, you know, it works.
That's good. That's good. I like that. The self-directed learning is the key for the future. We're all going to be doing it. Well, we should have already been doing it. It's actually kind of funny. Just a little anecdote. We got a couple minutes left here. I just was reading this article the other day about teachers union, head of the teachers union, or one of them. I don't know. That this president, this lady come out and say how they're pushing, she in particular is pushing to have the technology, and the AI tools and things removed from schools and so that they can't use them. And to me, that's extremely transparent. It's them trying to save their jobs from something that can do their job better than they can. I truly believe that. Obviously, with every bit of information available at your fingertips with the click of a mouse, what do you necessarily need teachers for? Obviously, there's their space. They're just like everything. It's like emergency medicine. It has its time and its place, but you should probably be, you know, concerned about your health on a daily basis, not just on an emergency. And I think it's the same with the education. Yes, there are times when you need some lead education, but most people need to educate themselves, and they need to have that drive to educate themselves. It's kind of what we started the conversation with, in the sort of where do, you know, children learn, lose that ability to learn or that desire to learn, and you have to relearn to want to learn and to want to teach yourself something new. And I think it's fantastic for adults, and I don't think it could be at a better time in our society to get people thinking about themselves and making themselves happy and doing things with themselves to keep themselves happy and make themselves better. So it's a wonderful thing you're doing there, and I like to see it in action. I have to check it out myself and see exactly what you have going on there. But I'm one of these people that I insist on doing it my own, doing it myself. You know, I do everything, all of this, I do all myself, all the technology, all the production, everything. It's all myself. I do everything myself, and I just get me. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with you 100%. The technology is a gift. Yeah. The technology allows lots of new things to happen in ways they couldn't happen. The technology allows me to teach people from all over the world and have them have access to a teacher who they might not have access to, that kind of teacher where they live. People live in little towns where there's not that many people who live. Maybe there's not a good teacher there. And so that's the beauty of the technology, right? Is that it allows all these things. So that kind of attitude of like, yeah, banning, that's just fear, you know?
And it's fear. That's it. You said it. You said it exactly. Yeah. It's fear. And people trying to protect their lousy little jobs, their phony baloney jobs. Every time I get the picture of the Mel Brooks movie, the Western, Blazing Saddles, when it's like, we're trying to save our phony baloney jobs.
Right. Right.
Mark, yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me, my friend, but we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much. For everybody else, I'll have the links for Mark and all of his information at towardanarchy.com. It's going to be episode 2625, in case you're wondering, people. And we'll see you all next time.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network.